Hello and welcome to another edition of the Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on 1170 SEN. On Monday, former Australian cricketer Gavin Robinson joined the show to help us break down the Tim Payne saga.
Plenty of texts coming through. 0457 736 736 is the text line. As the countdown to the Ashes continue, as I mentioned, the headlines keep screaming as the Tim Payne saga rolls on. So what next? Well, on the line is former Australian cricketer Gavin Robertson. Good morning, Gav. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Matty.
David Peaver has had quite a bit to say this morning. Do you think that Cricket Australia has put Tim Payne out to dry?
I think it's been a nervous reaction, and it's almost like a loss of communication over the last 4 years. And it's been something that has popped up again in surprise, and they've made that nervous reaction. And with regard to how you would now purvey Cricket Australia treating an employee in how is he coping, you know, day to day with the problems that are going on, not just for him, but for the person who is involved and both of the families. I wonder how the mental health of all of those people are going in the way this has been handled.
So Tim Payne put all of this on the table 3 days ago with that dramatic announcement. He's accepted responsibility for his actions, which were cleared at the time by the Integrity Unit and by Cricket Tasmania. So does it appear as though there's a lot of then and now in this one, Robbo? And how does the game justify what they did then by clearing and what they're doing now by not backing Payne as captain?
Well, I think I totally agree. I think that all of a sudden it's like, how are they not backing him? Because that's what I was going to before. With regard to how they treat players today and how players are treated with regard to a mental health situation, well, why wouldn't they have backed all of the people involved instead of just straight out into the media? And I think at the moment you've got a situation where Tim Payne is... Well, he's trying to be, I figure, the person who describes everything, where everyone else seemingly has gone quiet. The charge is out there, but it's like, okay, we'll just leave it up to Tim Payne now and the person involved. And I think that none of it is adding up. And I think we all love sport, right? And we talk about how do our sports people handle nerves or nervous reactions. Have a look at this. I mean, this is a pretty ugly situation, and I can't see it being resolved in the next few days. I just think it's going to continue on until someone runs into a brick wall. So I think it's just disappointing because, I mean, you and I both know that the cricket season needs, definitely right now, it needs a positivity around moving towards something that's going to happen, be it the Ashes and people being interested in it, because for the last 6 or 7 weeks, they've been a bit lost with what is going on with the game. We've finished rugby league, we've finished AFL, and now we're really searching for our next big competition. And so it's a little bit sad at the moment.
When you discuss this with those within the cricket circles that you still obviously spend a lot of time with, what's the reaction there? And is there a feeling in there, without being a conspiracy theorist here, Robbo, but is there a feeling here that this story drops a couple of weeks before the Ashes, when it's been there for some 3 years, quite a few journalists we understand already knew about it. So a lot of people are saying, well, why now? And who didn't want Tim Payne to captain Australia for the Ashes series?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. You could have been in the dressing room with a bunch of old players in the last week, because... Look, a lot of us, we caught up the other day, and a whole bunch of us, and we do it for Christmas, really, and started to talk a bit of it. We always talk about same time, test teams, and what do we think is going to happen, but it's very hard to not believe. Has Tim Payne done something wrong to somebody? That's what it feels like. It feels like it's just popped up, but I find when something pops up, there's every chance that that person has done something or annoyed somebody. So that's a chance. You're so right. I mean, how did it happen now? How did it not happen 2 months ago? And that's the confusion, where the game is about to really get going as we sit up at this date in a week or two. We're, will be up and running in a big way, and it comes out. So I'd agree, Matty. I think that somebody has annoyed somebody. And I think Tim Payne has said something or done something where he's annoyed somebody.
And we shouldn't forget, Robbo, here too, when we go back to the original case here, that there is another party involved. There's also family involved in the discussion around this as well. So there are two sort of issues here. What happened back in 2017 and what was dealt with along the way, and now what's happened in terms of Tim Payne's playing career. So I think we need to separate those. Do you think he did the right thing by handing over the captaincy, regardless of how and when this came out?
I don't know, Matty. I mean, what if he said, look, I've spoken to my wife, I've been through this. Yes, I did the wrong thing, and you know, but I've been working for the last 4 years doing a job, and all of a sudden now it feels like I've got to go. Well, why didn't I go then? Because I figure that Tim Payne was spoken to about that situation. Everyone across it, from the board to the employee, as the employee, was spoken about. This is the situation. This is what's happened. This is what we've done. This is the outcome. And so I figured back 4 years ago, there's some finalisation around it. But now, where's that finalisation? As you said as you opened up with, has it been that he's been thrown into the bushfire? And it just feels like it's a nervous reaction, and it's like, okay, bang, let's get rid of him. But mind you, Matty, I mean, when you and I were growing up, we went back, you know, we go back 20 years ago. Well, yeah, you'd probably get sacked, or you decide to walk away. But in this new world, I from what I read and see in life, not just in sport, but in politics or with, you know, COVID medications or the way the world works now, there's a certain correct way that we do things. And generally we do things that benefits the individual from a mental health perspective. So all of a sudden, in that small decision, as you said, it's like we've gone back 20 years and just made a snap decision, which doesn't seem to fit with the way the world works today.
I think we can lock in Pat Cummins to be the test captain. I think they will elevate him, and Steve Smith will be his vice captain. So the question then remains, back to Payne, would he be picked in the side? Do you think he's going to be in that side when they go out at the Gabba?
Well, I don't think so, because the perception has been, they've been portraying over the last 12 months, that he is the leadership captain. He is the leader of the group from a maturity point of view. So everyone figures from a public point of view, oh, well, he's there because of his seniority and his experience as captain, because we desperately need one. So I think that now, if he's not going to be captain, they'll move forward with regard to a younger wicketkeeper slash batsman. And I think that there's a lot of options. But I actually don't think there's a lot of options. I personally think that Alex Carey is, I'd say, to be honest, Matty, he could and should be captain within a 12 to 18 month period of being in the test side. The only reason I say that, if you ring Kevin Sheedy and speak to him about what he noticed about Alex Carey as a young boy, that Alex Carey actually captained the Nepal AFL team before the GWS Giants started in 2012. Now, he was a young fellow, but as Gubby Allen and Craig Lambert and Alan McConnell and Kevin Sheedy will all say, this kid was an out-and-out leader. And it's been portrayed through his cricket life that he is a leader. So I would think, I'd like to see him with that opportunity.
There is a fair bit more of this to play out, you think, and we're now 16 days away from the start of the Ashes. Good on you, Gavin. Thanks for your time this morning.
Cheers, Matty. Take care, mate.
Tuesday, a great chat with author Martin Lenihan, who spoke about the release of his new book and discussed the history of the Ashes.
The Ashes, 140 Years of Rivalry, Rituals and Respect, is the name of the book that was released in August that I've been telling you about. Martin Lenihan is the author of this book, alongside, of course, a whole stack of former players, because they were the ones telling the story, and Martin is on the line. Good morning, Martin.
G'day, Matt.
Hey, we've been doing this for the last couple of weeks and diving into a bit of Ashes history as a bit of a countdown as well, and reliving some of the wonderful moments. And you know what, mate? We've probably gone back as far as maybe 2005. You've gone all the way back 140 years. Where did this project come about for you?
Mate, we signed a deal a couple of years ago with Cricket Australia to do a couple of books. So I was lucky enough to do a book called Baggy Green Legends a couple of years ago. It came out in 2019, which was very much about the cap and the making of the cap and the special presentations they do before the game. So that was an awesome project to work on, and obviously beautiful timing this year to dive into the Ashes. So it's been an absolute privilege to talk to so many great players and share their memories.
Take us into, if you can, the process of doing this and the process of, say, sitting down with somebody like Greg Chappell or Mike Hussey. Where do you start and how long do you spend? Do you focus on particular times, dates, matches?
Yeah, look, I think we sort of set out to really focus on some of the key moments. Obviously, you mentioned Mike Hussey. Everyone remembers the 06-07 series, that incredible game that we won in Adelaide. So, you know, we thought about having a chat to him. Greg Chappell was amazing. You know, had a good hour on the phone talking to Greg. And, of course, his career just covered so many great games and from such a, you know, an important cricket family in Australia. So the key was really to sort of pick out some of the key moments and the key people. And I guess having been covering the game for so many years, I had a number of, I guess, you know, dealings with Ian Healy and guys like that already. So great to touch base with them again and get their thoughts on you know, just the great moments. And Heels just writing that forward for us was amazing. Just, you know, looking back and, as he said, how much it's meant to him over the years and being able to work with so many of those incredible guys in commentary and the legacy of the Ashes that he felt as he played in it.
And he's always been so great with sharing those as well. You know, when he was playing the game and then when he stepped out and he goes into commentary, he's now part of this network as well. That's one of the great things I love about Heels is that he understands that there's an Australian fascination and love affair with the Ashes from a spectator's point of view, mate, that is also there as a player's point of view. So he's been very good at making that go both ways. Was there a story or two in particular that when you got everything done and you put it all down on paper, just still blew you away?
Look, I think Dougie Walters in 1975, when he put that ball into the crowd in Perth off Bob Willis, you know, one of the great, I mean, they're just, blokes didn't score 100 in the session back in those days. It was so rare. You know, we saw guys like Adam Gilchrist eventually, they just score so quickly now, Davey Warner. But, you know, when Dougie did it, it was something completely out of the box. And just to see that ball fly into the crowd off Bob Willis, all the kids come on the field and, for Doug just to relive that moment, and of course straight into the dressing room, and you know, the 12th man would have had the long necks ready for the boys to celebrate, and you know, great times. And Doug just reflected on that, I think, with so much pride. I mean, when you talk about great cricketing characters in Australia, but Ashes characters, Dougie was certainly one of them.
With everything that's gone on in the game of cricket around the world, in our own backyard, dramas, controversy, the lot. Why is it that the aura of the Ashes has never, ever been tarnished, that the aura will always stand up of an Ashes series?
Yeah, I think Ian Healy, as you mentioned, I reckon he just summed it up beautifully, and some of the players as well, that this is the pinnacle. It doesn't seem to matter where the two nations are in terms of their cricket leading into these series. I mean, there's so much history. You are, I think, rated as an Australian cricketer and an English cricketer on what you can do in the Ashes series. It's everything else goes out the window, the form goes out the window, and you have to perform on this stage. And just the legacy of so many great names, and, you know, English names like Botham, and I mentioned Bob Willis, and, you know, all the great players they've had, and then right back to Don Bradman and the incredible things he did. And it just feels like every Australian cricketer wants to, you know, follow on what's gone before them, make sure they don't let anybody down. And, you know, when we win the Ashes, it's just, it's absolutely the pinnacle, and particularly winning at England, which, of course, Ian Healy did in 1989 and recounts those stories so beautifully of being over there with Alan Border's team and bringing the Ashes back.
Who were your heroes growing up, Martin? And did you sit in front of any of these for the last couple of books that you've been doing?
Mate, I was born in 1965, so I reckon I really started getting into the Ashes probably in those mid-70s. So, as I mentioned in the introduction to the book, I was lucky enough to go to a cricket camp in 1977 run by Kerry Packer. And it was at boarding school in Sydney where we spent a whole week, 100 kids, and we had a lot of these World Series cricket guys came in and coach us. That's where I met Doug Walters for the first time. Not that he would remember that, of course, but, mate, it was incredible for us young guys and the Chapels and Rick McCosker and Ian Davis and guys like that. And then, you know, a bit later in life, lucky enough to work at Inside Edge magazine where Richie Benno and Ian Chapel were, you know, the two star writers, I guess, for that magazine put on by Kerry Packer, and spent some time with them. And it's just been an absolute privilege, I think, over the years to, you know, to spend time. Ian Healy and Mark Taylor came with us on a 1999 World Cup tour of England with Inside Edge magazine, and they led the tour, and I was fortunate enough to be there with them. And just the time that they gave to the people on that tour and the stories that they told, and, you know, it was just an absolute honour to spend that time with them. So, yeah, it's been an incredible journey, and very lucky just to spend time with so many of those guys over the years and have them just recount. You know, Mike Hussey was incredible, talking about 07. Ashton Agar reflecting on his debut when he batted with Phil Hughes and just how much that means to him, obviously, with, sadly, we've lost Phil now. And Ashton just remembers that day so fondly, that, you know, the two of them being out there together. So many great yarns, and yeah, just a privilege to be able to share them with all these people.
Yeah, and a great read. And I love the fact that you've put it under rivalry, rituals and respect. I think that summarises, you know, the Ashes and the history of the Ashes as well. Before I let you go, as a cricket lover, as somebody who grew up playing the sport, you go through this incredible career, you have all of these wonderful players to lean on. Inside Edge, what a great mag, mate. Let me throw this at you. If there's one player in the history of the Ashes, if you've got a bat and you want to face in the nets, who would it be? There's one bowler coming up.
Yeah, what a great question. It's I thought you were going to ask me a batsman there for a minute. I was going to have to say,
I'm going to come back to that, mate.
yeah. Mate, look, I think as a batsman, I reckon I'd love to go in and face Shane Warne and just see. I mean, we're probably too scared to face up to Brett Lee and Jeff Thompson and Dennis Lilly. So I reckon we'll go Shane Warne. But what an absolute, when he was at his prime, imagine trying to face Warney and see what was coming down at you. So I reckon that'd be a lot of fun to face up to Warney.
That's a great shout, because there's no way in the world I would do a Piers Morgan and step in front of B. Lee or Tomo or Lily for that matter, or anyone else. In fact, I would like to face up to, what's his name? Terry Alderman. I'd love to face up, because remember Terry Alderman took 40 wickets in an Ashes series, didn't he? 41 wickets in a series,
yep,
and his line and length and swing was incredible. I would have loved to have faced up to him in the nets. All right, so who would you like to bowl to then in the nets?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't like to bowl to Don Bradman. I mentioned him, of course. I mean, his Ashes exploits were just incredible, and such great memories of what he did, particularly over in England. So, look, I reckon it'd be a lot of fun to bowl to some of these the current players who are just the way that they're batting now and the different things they can do. And I think it's really livened up Test cricket, and we'll see it this summer. They score so much quicker now. The way guys like David Warner improvise, I think bowling to him or even to an Adam Gilchrist who famously tore England apart in a game in Perth where he hit a whole bunch of sixes, and you know, he could come in sort of middle order and just take the whole game away from England in a heartbeat. So I reckon having a crack at either of those two very, very good left-handers would be a bit of fun and a great challenge as well.
I'd throw in Matty Hayden in that one too, just to see what he looks like when he's staring you down at the other end of the pitch, and just how intimidating he would be, not to mention what he'd do when you throw a lollipop down there, he'd send it skywards. But I'd go with you on Warning and Gilly as well. Good on you, mate. Great to catch up and have a chat. The book is The Ashes, 140 Years of Rivalry, Rituals and Respect. We love having a trip down memory lane and a great read as well. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Martin Lenihan there, 0457 736 736. So you've got one bowler out of Ashes history that you'd like to face in the nets. Who would it be? And I reckon Warney would be a great challenge. No way in the world would I step out there in front of any of the fast bowlers. And I reckon I'd still be petrified with Warney, but I would love to see and hear the ball that Shane Warne throws down, especially at his peak. And if you've got one batsman who you want to bowl to in the nets, who would it be? Would have been incredible, obviously, to see Sir Donald Bradman in action. But then you go modern-day players. And instantly, I thought Gilly came to mind as well. But then I thought, I'd love to test myself against a Matty Hayden just to see how petrifying it would be to come down the pitch and see that imposing figure at the other end. Maybe let me know. Batter and bowler you would like to take on in the nets. 0457 736 736. Back after this break.
Wednesday, Australian batsman Marcus Harris joined us live from quarantine on the Gold Coast before the start of this year's Ashes series.
Welcome back on the text line. Still plenty of texts here around our most likeable Australian athletes. I posed this question early today, and boy, we've had some great names come through the text machine. 0457 736 736 is that number. Pommy Rabideau says, I think one of the most likeable Australian athletes has to be your man, Jake Trbojevic. He seems like the nicest bloke in sport. And no for me on the Christmas Day game. I like tradition too much. That one from Pommy Rabideau. So you don't like the thought that the NBL and the Sydney Kings in particular are pushing for game day on Christmas Day. I like it. I got to say, Pommy Rabideau, when I heard about this morning, I thought, well, why not? Christmas is celebrated in many different ways, and that day is celebrated in many different ways across many different parts of our culture across the country. And if the Kings can see an opening there, and I guarantee you it will pull a crowd, especially at the gate. So if the Kings can see an opening there, then I think they should be applauded for at least having a crack at it and putting it out there that there's an option for us to look at. Ryan says, Matty, Ben Simmons for the most laughable athlete. Oh, we're after likable, not laughable. But there's a different way of taking it. And Dan Ricciardo would have to be up there on the likable list. It's very hard not to like Daniel Ricciardo. When you see him come out of a victory with a huge smile on his face, and then he comes out of a loss with a huge smile on his face as well. He just does not change along the way. The Chookman reckons that power, as the kids' word of the year, is fake. Chookman's going for a hat-trick. You're with me, Chookman. That's right. I'm two out of two, so I'm going for a hat-trick and fake news from the newsroom. Is it the $500 cocktail? And would you pay $500 for a cocktail if it's a status symbol? Want to be a hell of a cocktail. How much have you paid for a cocktail or a drink at one of the Sydney bars? $500 cocktail at CBD is Sydney's newest status symbol. So that's the one, number one in the fake news. Number two is power named as Australian Children's Word of the Year. Is that real or fake? Or number three, the car that was parked so badly that some girls on a hen's night had to pick it up and move it to fit into their SUV. Will be the first question that I ask Alana, what type of car was it? If we're talking one of those smart cars, totally plausible. But if we're talking a big beast, how many people do you need to pick up a massive ute, for instance, and move it along the way? Some news out away from sport. Karen Webb has been announced as the new State Police Commissioner to replace the retiring Mick Fuller. So Karen Webb has just been officially announced as the new Police Commissioner of New South Wales. She becomes the first female to hold the job, currently the Deputy Police Commissioner, after being elevated to that position in July. So Mick Fuller retiring and Karen Webb will take over as the new Police Commissioner of New South Wales. So a little bit of news away from sport there. Mick from the Gong says, I really like Brian Gorgian, Boomers and Hawks coach, as a likeable athlete. Let's take you straight into the Australian cricket camp right now. Marcus Harris is on the line on 1170 SEN on the morning show. Morning, Marcus.
Hey, mate.
I'm interested to know, first of all, how you're feeling heading towards the first Ashes test on the back of the fact that it appears as though your spot is secure. Your spot at the top of the order is secure.
Yeah, excited. I think to... obviously have not too many worries about selection stuff coming into the first test is a relief. No matter how many games of cricket you played, knowing that your spot's probably there is good. So I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to our preparation, obviously up here in Gold Coast in quarantine. We've got a good group of guys here that us, New South Welshmen and Victorians have had to come do quarantine with the World Cup boys, but it's good. We've had a couple of good training days at Metricon, which has been good. So looking forward to getting out there again and getting on with it.
Mate, what does it take away when you know that you've got the job ahead of you and you don't have to, I guess, impress in the nets? You've still got to obviously keep your head down and go about your work and be prepared. But what does it take away? Does it take away a little bit of the anxiety, a little bit of the pressure trying to barge your way into that first test lineup?
Yeah, it probably takes away a few of your thoughts running around at night time when you put your head on the pillow. definitely can help you sleep a bit easier. So that's really good, which is good. It's good that the communication from the selectors is really clear. You know where you stand and know what you need to do. You can sort of just go out and prepare the way you need to prepare and be ready to go. It's very helpful.
What have you learned in your first 10 tests for Australia that you'll take into these next test matches?
Oh, well, I think obviously the test cricket's a hard game and it's pretty ruthless. I think not just for my first 10 tests, but probably for my, you know, 10 years of Shield cricket and first class cricket, understanding that the game's hard, but, you know, the more work you put into it, and understanding as you get a bit older and appreciating the game that it can come to you. Not everyone's journey sort of the same. It can be hard. It can take you a little while to work it out. So that's what's been probably a challenge is, you know, my first 10 games probably haven't done quite as well as what I've wanted to do, but I sort of know in the back of my mind and have the belief that I can do really well going forward. So, and that's the discussions I've had with Bales, with him, you know, backing me in, that they know I can do it just through consistency of performance, and hoping that I can do the same for Australia.
Are you a nervous guy at all, Marcus? Do you sort of have a look at the calendar and go, we're 15 days away from one of the biggest test matches I'll play in my life and one of the biggest series?
It ebbs and flows. I don't get too nervous, but you're obviously aware that you're playing for your country and you're playing, you know, against England in a home Ashes series. It's obviously a big thing. And I think sometimes when you have those, you might have a doubt or you get nervous about what's happening. You put in perspective that, you know, everyone would give their arms and legs to be in the position I'm in. So you just put into a bit of perspective and realize how lucky you are. And just like I said, you look forward just to getting out there and getting on with it. But like I said before, that the anxiety of not having to worry about selection too much going into that first test makes things a bit easier.
And, you know, as an athlete performing at the highest level, I know that you'll just want to get out there and so will all of your teammates, and especially with everything that's going on. Can you give us a sense of how the playing group is dealing with the issues around you?
Yeah, to be honest, the vibe in the quarantine group's really good. Quarantine brings you close together. We're lucky that we've got some common areas and stuff that we can hang out in every night. So everyone's staying together. Obviously what's happened hasn't been ideal, but there's some things in life you can't control. So it's just a curveball that gets thrown at you, but we're looking forward to, I think we've got another week left of quarantine. Then we all join up together in Brisbane. So that'll be good. And then, yeah, once you get out on the ground, that stuff's done and just get on with the cricket.
Is Paddy Cummins getting ribbed? Is he getting called Skip?
Not yet, but Paddy's he's a pretty switched on bloke and a senior guy in the group. Obviously, he's vice captain at the moment. So, I think if he becomes captain, if he changes at all, he'll probably cop a bit of flack from the boys. But he's a good man, Paddy.
Good on you, mate. Exciting times ahead. Wish you all the very best. Can't wait to see you back in action alongside Davey Warner at the front. And enjoy the Ashes series. There'll be nothing quite like it.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
On Thursday, we break down the Christmas wish list for all 16 NRL teams heading into the 2022 season.
Alrighty, all I want for Christmas. I've got texts here backing up like you wouldn't believe to AM, Tommy, with our listeners and what they want for their club for Christmas. Mick from the Gong says, all I want for Christmas is the top 8, 50% of the comp, to be reduced to a top 6, 40% of the comp.
Interesting.
Not bad.
Yeah, that's been floated around a lot. And then introducing maybe a wild card system where the top 2 teams get a week off at the start. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. Yeah.
Another one says, Matt, all I want for Christmas is the Dragons to play consistent football. So a month out, here's what we're going to do.
Yep.
Let's take a look at the NRL ladder as it finished last year. We'll go from the bottom up and we'll do it 5 clubs at a time. So I'm going to give you the name of the club and I want you to finish the sentence. All I want for Christmas for the Bulldogs is?
For Matt Burden to be their superstar.
You nail Matt Burton straight to the wall with
that one. He's viewed as kind of, you know, their saviour, to put it in some light terms. But
what about the Fox?
Yeah, but Fox is going to play wing. Matt Burton is going to play 6. He's been likened to a young Brad Fittler. He burst on the scene last year with the Panthers. But they, you know, Matty as well, they signed him on this day last year in 2020. And I remember we broke the news on the show, and it was massive news because he's been earmarked as an 18-year-old. So the Bulldogs, they need Burton to be their superstar.
All I want for Christmas for the Cowboys is?
Yeah, now, and you know, some listeners may be like, oh, you know, be obvious, you know, you just want they want to be better, you know, be more consistent. But we're trying to go a different left field with some of these. So I said for the Cowboys, all I want for Christmas with the Cowboys is to sort out their halves dilemma. So they signed Chad Townsend on big money, but they've also signed Tom Dearden mid-season last year, and they've got Scott Drinkwater on the books there as well. Now, Scott Drinkwater's been rumoured to maybe go to the Newcastle Knights to replace Mitch Pearce, but I think, you know, three doesn't go into two. We know that. So they need to sort out what they're going to do with their halves come round one. You would assume Chad's going to be there because they've paid him the big money. He's won a comp, but they need to sort that out, in my opinion.
The Broncos finished 14th this season. All I want for the Brisbane Broncos for Christmas is...
for Adam Reynolds to be the leader they desperately need. I think with the Broncos, we all know the problems that they have had the last two seasons. They were more consistent this season, but they're still a very young squad. They've lost Alex Glenn, who was their captain, who's now retired. They need a lot of leadership. They lost players in the recent past, like Jordan Kahu, Josh McGuire, Cody Nikorima, who were experienced veterans. You bring in Adam Reynolds, who's one of the most respected players in the game. They need him to be their leader, and I believe they should make him captain as well.
All I want for the West Tigers after finishing 13th this year and winning just 8 games is...
now, this one's simple. Make the top 8 and break their finals drought. They haven't played finals footy since 2011. We always make the joke that they finished 9th or thereabouts. They just need to make the 8 and break their finals drought.
And for the Warriors, the New Zealand Warriors, or the Warriors as they're now known, all I want for Christmas for the Warriors is...
this is an easy one as well. To play some matches at Mount Smart Stadium and not be stuck over here in Australia.
Yeah, I thought you were going that way. Well, they'll finally get home, all things being equal, but it would be great to see them get home more often in the next season, 2022. So that takes us from 16th up to 12th. Means that next on the list when we chat, it will be the Dragons, Raiders, Sharks, Titans and Knights. We're looking for all you want for Christmas for your footy team a month out from Christmas Day. 0457 736 736 is the text line. Alrighty, 2 a.m. Tommy has joined me as we go through more clubs than all I want for Christmas. We've done the bottom, well, from the bottom up, we've done 5 clubs. Canterbury. Who else did we do? Canberra.
We did Cowboys, Bulldogs,
Broncos, Tigers and Warriors.
Yes. So now we'll do teams 11th through to 7th on the 2021. My goodness. NRL ladder. So we'll start with the Dragons. And I'm going to go with to show faith in their young stars. Last year, I was really impressed by some of their young players like Tyrell Sloan, Jaden Sullivan and Junior Amone. But they've also signed some other players like Moses and Mbai. They've got Andrew McCulloch there, but they're aging players in my opinion. So I want Hook. They've signed a lot of players, but I want Hook to start with Tyrell Sloan at fullback, Jaden Sullivan at 9 and Junior Amone, also known as Talatau Amone, at 6. I want him to show faith in their young stars because I think they can do something really, really special and, you know, maybe cause a couple of upsets and sneak into that 8th position if Hook shows faith in those young players.
The team that finished 10th, the Raiders. All Canberra wants for Christmas is...
Jack Wyden to snap out of his rut. Now, this may seem a bit controversial because he did play Origin this season, but he was the 2020 Dally M medalist. He was the 2019 Clive Churchill medalist, but I don't think Jack Wyden was good this year. I thought he was below average for the Raiders, and he is their spark. He's their linchpin in their side. When he's on, the Raiders can be a serious, serious threat, and he needs to snap out of his rut because I don't think he was up for it this season, if I'm being brutally honest.
9th this year, new coach, new players out there next year. All the Sharks want for Christmas is...
yeah, I'm really bullish on the Sharks this season. I know Joel Kane is as well. I think they can press for the top 4, but I think they'll finish in that 5th, 6th position. I'm going to go with Craig Fitzgibbon to unite their team and their new signings. So they've signed some really key and really smart players in Nicho Hynes, Cam McInnes, and of course Dale Finucane. And Craig Fitzgibbon, he's got a lot of positive reception when he started with the club. He's got a lot of big things promised, so I think he'll need to unite this team. And it's going to be a new, fresh-looking team for the Sharks with those 3 players. They've also signed Matty Kavalu. So Craig Fitzgibbon to unite this new outfit.
I think they've got a good future ahead. I agree with you on that one. So let's move into the top 8 now as they finish this season. All the Titans want for Christmas.
Yeah, look, I'm really uncertain about the Titans next year, and all they want for Christmas is experience in key positions. Matty, I'll give you what their proposed spine will probably look like in round one of 2022. They'll have Jaden Campbell at fullback, AJ Brimson 5'8", Toby Sexton at 7, and probably Aaron Clark at 9. All those players combined have played less than 50 NRL games. So I'm very, very uncertain about what the Titans can achieve next year because they don't have experience in those key positions. Those players win you games. No matter how good Tino Faasuamalau is and how damaging David Fifita is as a ball runner, they need experience in the spine.
And what about the Knights? What do the Knights want for Christmas?
To find a suitable replacement for Mitchell Pearce. The Newcastle Knights winning percentage the last 3 years that Mitchell was there was significantly down when Mitchell was out injured. And he did have a couple of injury problems with his pec and his hamstring. They've brought in Adam Clune. They've got Tex Hoy there. They may even think about putting Kalen Ponga in the halves. But I think they still need to find a suitable replacement for Mitchell Pearce, someone who's experienced in that number seven position before round one of next year.
All right, well, that takes us up to position number 7 as they finished this year. So when we regroup, we'll go through the rest. And I also reckon we need to find out what the Dolphins want for Christmas. They're now well and truly in the frame. Nice work, 2AM Tommy. 2AM Tommy has joined me this morning, and we've been going through the rugby league teams. And we started with the latter as how they finished this season and what your team wants for Christmas. So we're up to team position number 6 from this year. What do you think the Eels want for Christmas, Tommy?
Yeah, okay. This may be a bit vague when I say this, but they need to take that next step. So apart from 2018, where they won the Wooden Spoon, 2017, 19, 20, and 2021, they've failed and they've finished in week 2 of the NRL finals. They haven't been able to take that next step. Like with the Eels the last few years, you always say, yeah, they'll be a good regular season team. They make the finals. But do we really view them as premiership contenders when it comes down to the wire in September? No. For the last 5 years, they've reached that week 2 and they haven't been able to get over that hurdle. So I think they need to take that next step and really flex their premiership muscles because, you know, I don't think they're gonna retain both Junior Paulo and Reid Marnie. They'll probably have to make a decision on one of them. So this is, and we know they're losing Isaiah Papali'i. So they got to strike now in this final year, in my opinion.
Let's move on. The Roosters. All the Roosters want for Christmas is?
We've had a lot of listeners say this. No more injuries. No more retirements. Now, injuries happen to every single team, every single year. However, the number of injuries, the seriousness of the injuries that the Roosters had this year, some of them resulting in retirements, was just ridiculous. It was the first time this had ever happened. So we know there's going to be injuries, but we don't want those season enders, which happened to 5, 6, I think it was about 7 players, especially if you had 3 ACLs in Brett Morris, Luke Keary, and Lindsay Collins. So no more big season-ending injuries or retirements for the Roosters.
That's the Roosters. What do the Seagulls want for Christmas?
You and Adam Peacock mentioned this earlier in the show. Protect Tom Trbojevic at all costs. Protect him from himself with his hamstrings. probably the Seagulls players, when they, you know, if they go out for a couple of drinks or whatever, just form a guard of, not a guard of honour, but just a ring. You know, the Secret Service is there for the president.
Yeah.
That's what the Seagulls players need to do.
Maybe we need to get Tommy Turbo like you know, one of those sumo suits.
Yes.
You know, those big blow up suits. So nothing, if he falls over or he can't run too fast. Well, I mean, we're making out as though the bloke's ready to, you know, ping a hamstring at any minute. He's the best player in the competition. He's got himself absolutely in tip-top shape. So you're right. I think Operation PTT, Protect Tommy Turbo, is front and centre for the Christmas wish list at the Manly Seagulls. What about the Rabbitohs?
Well, just before the Rabbitohs, have you seen the movie? It came out in 2001, Bubble Boy, with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
So he's just in a bubble. Maybe that's what Tom needs to do for the rest of the offseason.
No.
Get
no,
in the bubble.
No. Let him enjoy. Get him out there. I'm okay for us to have a joke about this, but Tom Trbojevic needs to be front and centre out there showing the world how good he is.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Rabbitohs, this seems, again, very simple. Go one better in 2022. It's pretty easy, isn't it? They failed at the last hurdle in the grand final. It was a spectacular grand final. They nearly did it. Adam Reynolds, if he kicked that sideline conversion, who knows what would have happened if they went into Golden Point, but just go one better in 2022. It's going to be a tough ask for them, though. I mean, we had one listener text him before saying, hey, I just want Latrell Mitchell to play a final series for us because he missed out in 2020 with that hamstring injury. We remember he missed out on this season because of suspension. They're a different team when he's in there, but it's going to be a tough ask for them given there's no Adam Reynolds, there's no Jaden Sewer, and there's no Dane Gagai. So, and there's no Wayne Bennett, Jason Demetrio's first year. So it'll be an interesting season for the Rabbitohs. I'm very intrigued to see, and I mean this genuinely, not just saying that as a Roosters fan, I'm genuinely interested to see what happens with them this year with a lot of changes.
What do the Premiers want for Christmas?
Not to have that Premiership hangover. Since the NRL has started, only the Roosters in 2018 and 2019 have gone back-to-back. The Panthers, they've still got the squad there. They've lost Kurt Catewell. They've lost Matt Burden. We know they've lost Tyrone May, even though he didn't play a big role in their Premiership success. They just don't want to have that Premiership hangover. You've got Nathan Cleary there. You've got Jerome Luai. You've got the same spine, a very talented forward pack. The thing with Penrith is you can't really doubt them out now because they're going to develop so many good youngsters coming through. Every single season, they'll bring about four or five players on debut and they'll make a positive impact for them. So, yes, they may lose some players, but they've got some talented youngsters in there. One guy who I'm really keen to see what happens with is a young player named Isaac Targo. Made his debut for them in this season. And I've got him earmarked as Paul Momorowski's replacement in the centres. So for the Panthers, their wish list not to have that Premiership hangover.
So that leaves us with the final team from this year, but also one coming in 2023. Just quickly, the Storm want for Christmas?
Shore up the futures, not just of Brandon Smith, who's going on that little charade, you know, presenting himself to all different clubs, but also Cameron Munster. Now, he is off contract at the end of 2023. However, there have been whispers and rumours that he could go join the Dolphins. We know he said before the end of the season that he would be open to joining a second Brisbane team. So, and we know what happened to him in the off-season when he had some off-field dramas. So they need to shore up the futures, not just of Brandon Smith, but I reckon Cameron Munster, who is their marquee man.
So then that leaves us, the Dolphins, as we head towards next year. Now, what is it? It's the 25th of November. There are 30 days in November. So you have 5 days before your expiry date on the Dolphins signing a marquee player. And we'll be rubbing it in. Don't worry about that. So you've got another week, essentially, to go. What do the Dolphins want for Christmas?
Well, let's just clarify that, Matt, because you did say marquee player. And I remember we've got the audio saved. I did not say marquee player. I just said player before the end of November.
Did you not say a player like Brandon Smith?
No. I just said player. We'll play it later on in the show so we can remind you and also the listeners. But wish list, sign a player, any player. They have signed that youngster, Harrison. I forget his last name, but he hasn't played NRL. So sign an NRL player, Dolphins. That's on their wish list.
Just sign a player. That's all you need. We will dig out that audio because I'm pretty sure. I mean, you were intimating about a marquee player. That's what you were talking about. So don't try and dig yourself out of the hole. We'll be brutal here. We might even give the Barmy Army a call and they can pen a song for you if it doesn't come true. That's what we think your team needs for Christmas. You can let me know your thoughts.
And on Friday, we broke down Reid Marnie's move to the Bulldogs, Parramatta Eels' poor recruitment strategy, and more NRL free agency talk.
Now, before we get underway, we've got to make it official because we need a transfer update intro with our exclusive morning show voiceover guy, Matty Party.
Sure. Well, it's Friday, so I've selected the category called Dance and EDM. I'm not sure how we'll go here. But... oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, Tommy's music.
And now it's time for an NRL player transfer update with 2 a.m. Tommy.
Let's get down to business, Tommy. Let's get down to business. What on earth is going on at Parramatta?
Look, I've got no idea. And I want to pose this to you, Matty. I want to pose this to the listeners. So the Parramatta Eels, they've re-signed Regan Campbell-Gillard. They've re-signed their captain, Clint Gutherson. But we now know it's confirmed that they're going to lose Murata Niokore. They're going to lose Isaiah Papali'i. And they're going to lose, of course, Reid Marnie to the Bulldogs. But where's the communication with the fans? Where's the transparency in terms of, all right, this is our recruitment strategy. This is what we want to do. This is what we want to achieve. Remember last year or towards the end of this season, they re-signed Brad Arthur because they believed they wanted that confirmation and they wanted to send a message to the players saying, hey, this is our guy. This is our man to lead the team. So they wanted to send a voice to those players off contract saying, hey, we've now got security with the head coach. You can now re-sign. This is the vision that we're going to try to sell to you. However, that vision is not getting through to Reid Marnie, Niokore or Papali'i. So where's the transparency? I think, and I want to hear from Eels fans and other listeners, if you're so despondent with your club, should they come out and tell you what they're doing or what they're trying to do? Should their football boss, general manager of football, Mark O'Neill, along with the CEO, Jim Sarantinos, sit down for a press conference, ask, answer questions from fans, answer questions from paying members? Because a lot of fans, we've heard it on Vossi's show this morning, we've already heard it through some of the texts already, they're despondent. They're getting rid of their membership. They're not going to go to some of the games this year because they're fed up with how the club is managing their salary cap and managing their roster.
Do you want to hear from your club about what the direction is, Eels fans? Let us know. And does it, I mean, at the end of the day, does it make a difference? Because as soon as they put themselves up there, they're just going to get slammed for letting players go. They've got to come out, in my opinion, Tommy, and get a signing on the board. They've got to lock up Junior Paulo. They should have been having a look at Brandon Smith. I don't know if they have been. I mean, Smith's been for sale to everybody, but now they've lost Reid Marnie. And the thing about this too is, let's not discount what Gus Gould's doing in this entire scenario, because let's not forget that Marnie went to the Eels. He's from the Canterbury-Bankstown junior system, and he went to the Eels because the Bulldogs didn't think he was going to be good enough for the NRL. Now, clearly, Phil Gould wasn't there at the time, but he's there right now. So you go, what's the difference right now for when the Bulldogs were looking at Reid Marnie all those years ago, and now they're looking at him? And the difference is Phil Gould. He's got him there to the club. He's got others to the club. He's building, 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 and that's been the key difference. If we're putting up a race of who's dominating the signings here, we're going to have Canterbury sitting way at the top, and we're going to have Parramatta bleeding like crazy, and Wayne Bennett and the Dolphins not doing anything. It's an extraordinary scenario.
Yeah, you can't underestimate guys like Gus. Sat said on his program last night, it's just like Gus, Mal Meninga up at the Titans. There's some figures in rugby league where they've just got this aura attached to them. And when you sit down for a meeting, you're transfixed with them. They sell you a vision of what the club's trying to do, what the club's trying to build. And Sats mentioned it last night. Gus had that presence of him when he was at the Roosters in the 90s. He's got Brad Fittler there. He got Matt Singh. He built a great system at the Penrith Panthers. Brought in guys like Matt Burden, Nathan Cleary, James Fisher-Harris, Jerome Luai, Brian To'o, and now he's gone to the Bulldogs, a team that has won a spoon this year, came second last year, and has signed premier players like Reid Marnie, Tevita Pangai Jr., Matt Burden, Brent Naden, Matt Dufty, Paul Vaughan. These guys, and some of them are on one-year deals because that's the price you pay, and the club is showing faith in them. But these are big-time players that want to go to the club. They want to go to a club that literally just came last. Reid Marnie, he's played finals footy the last three of the four past seasons, and he's just signed with the club that has finished last. Is that's just a slap in the face of the Parramatta Eels. Reid Marnie said, I'm going to go to a club that just won the wooden spoon rather than stay here. Now, who knows, you know, the monetary figures that they are going to offer him, and obviously that plays a big part in his decision. But from a pure football point of view, if Reid Marnie was to go and say, yeah, I'm going to go sign with the Bulldogs instead of saying with the Eels, who have just played finals footy in the three of the past four seasons, it's pretty staggering, really. And it's a big, big sign of where the Parramatta Eels are right now.
Well, 4 years, $2.4 million is going to sway anyone. Absolutely. That's a big, big money offer, and it's a long-term offer as well. So that's the serious part of the negotiation, when it doesn't really matter, to be brutal, who's sitting on the other side of the table. When you're throwing down that kind of offer in front of somebody, that gets the serious stuff talking. But you're spot on. When you do have somebody at the other side of the table who can sell the vision and have the backing and the power and the networks and all that kind of stuff that a Phil Gould does, then you're up against some pretty tough opposition. So maybe the question, Tommy, is for Parramatta, who's doing that there? Who is their Phil Gould? Who's their Wayne? Who's their Mal Meninga?
Well, I'll tell you who they should have brought in, because he announced his retirement from broadcasting this year, Peter Sterling. Mm. You can't tell me Sterlo, if he was with Mark O'Neill and Jim Sarantinos, the CEO and the football manager, and he sat down with Reid Marnie, Junior Paulo, Papali'i, and we know everyone loves Sterlo. Who doesn't like Peter Sterling? He can sell you a vision. He's a straight and honest guy. He's a club legend, one of the greatest players in their history. They should have brought him on as an advisor. Doesn't have to do any of the training. Just helps him out here and there. Helps him out with their recruitment, with their retention. Gives Brad Arthur some advice, you know, from a footballing point of view. Maybe works 1-2 days a week. Pay him a couple, whatever. Just bring him on as an ambassador and advisor. They could have done a lot better than Sterling. Bring him in. Like, do something. Show an effort.
On the text line, Jamboree Jet says, Matty, great show. Eels' problem started with paying Moses $1 million, one-tenth of the salary cap. Enjoy the wet weekend. Another one, they have to sign Mitch Kenny right now from the Panthers. This one, something's massively wrong with Parramatta. Three players have signed with teams in the bottom eight and two have not signed for over. But what I believe is their market value, both good deals done by the Tigers and the Dogs. Wheels off the bus. That's what they're saying about Parramatta right here on our text line. 0457 736 736. Darry says, starting to think there's something to the rumour that some players are not happy with Clint Gutherson, thinking he's something special and above everybody else with his relationship with the coach. Well, that was the stuff that was around about the size of the hotel rooms, wasn't it? That was
We can't really read into that. Who knows? And all the players.
That's Rumourville.
Yeah,
Rumourville.
And all the players rubbished that rumour at the time as well.
Exactly. What else is happening in transfer
world? Christian Welch, another big target for the Dolphins. Christian Welch has re-signed with the Melbourne Storm. He announced it yesterday until the end of 2025. I've said it on this program multiple times. I think he's one of the most impressive players in the competition we've got right now. He's a future CEO of one of the clubs, if not the NRL in itself. I love him as a player, one of my favourites. The Dragons have locked up exciting youngster Jaden Sullivan until the end of 2025 as well on a three-year deal. Very, very exciting young footy player. Can play in the halves, can also play dummy half. I think he'll play a lot of footy this season as well. And another Dolphins target, who we believed was very close to signing with the club, Pat Carrigan. He has re-signed with the Broncos until the end of 2024. I'm going to remember he tore his ACL in the early rounds of this season, so he didn't play a lot of footy this year, but he's re-signed with the Broncos until the end of 2024 season. The Dolphins, who are they going to sign, Matty? We've only got 4 days until the end of November until my prediction does or does not come right, so it's pressing times.
Well, you gave yourself up there. As much as I'd like to help you from, you know, stepping in front of the bus, you did it. Well, I couldn't get you off.
Well, I couldn't say, you know, until the end of the year, because I think that's giving myself too much time. Well, you know, and then if it did happen, anyone could have said, well, you know, anyone could have predicted end of the year. So I gave myself a little bit of a tight setting end of November. Because I wanted to, come on, Wayne Bennett, put those wheels in motion. We talk about guys with auras. Phil Gould, Mal Meninga, Peter Cern. I think Wayne Bennett's got them all covered there. Surely he can sign someone in 4 days.
You know who's going to be the hardest working non-player manager across the weekend? 2 a.m. Tommy. He'll be ringing up clubs. He'll be ringing up players. He'll be saying, come on, just give us a signing. Just get somebody, Dolphins. Get somebody up there. He'll be working the phones like a player manager. So you've got until Tuesday, which is the end of November. So we'll give you until Wednesday morning to see if there's a Dolphins signing that lives up to what you said on the radio, that they'll lock somebody big in by the end of November. Smithy from Melbourne says, mate, if your rival radio station offered you twice as much money, you'd be out the door in a flash. Would that be a slap in the face to SEN? How do you know they haven't? Smithy, how do you know they already haven't? I'm still here. But thanks for your thought. 0457 736 736 is the text line. Now, we need to do, you know what we need to do today, Tommy?
Yes.
We haven't done it for a while because we've been so busy, but Tommy's Tribune needs to come on back. We need to hold an editorial meeting, so I'm going to give you a little bit of time to think about that, because I'm sure we can garner some headlines around the situation at the Eels and also the situation of who signs where or who signs with the Dolphins and perhaps Brandon Smith as well. So let's get some headlines going for 2 a.m, Tommy, and Tommy's Tribune. We will reconvene. Well, we'll actually convene an editorial meeting. They're always good fun. 0457 736 736 is the text line. Let us know your thoughts this morning. 1300 01 1170. If you're a Parramatta fan, what do you want your club to do right now to stop you from going in there and handing back your membership, which is what you're telling me some of our listeners are telling me they're already doing? What do you want the Eels to do right now? Let us know. We'll catch up with Steve Corica, head coach of Sydney FC, right after this.
Thanks for listening to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White. We'll be back Monday morning from 9 a.m.